Greetings. I am Sav Chagrin, podcast guru and president of the Podfix Network. Since revealing myself as the puppeteer of the Podfix Nation, I have felt the need to be more hands-on with the day-to-day operations. Therefore, every Thursday, I will be opening the Podfix Archives. An absolute museum for your ears. And best of all, it is curated by none other than myself, Sav Chagrin, and no one else. I will be blowing the dust off my personally hand-pressed vinyl copies of original airings of classic Podfix Network episodes, uploading them to the satellites, and then rebroadcasting them to the masses. Sure, it's a lot of extra work, but one thing I have learned over the years is that digital media converted to vinyl converted back to digital is the way podcasts were meant to be heard. And since I, Sav Chagrin, have done all the heavy lifting for you, you just need to subscribe today to Podfix Presents wherever the best podcasts in the world are found. And then sit back, relax, and enjoy. The Podfix Network, artist-owned and loved.
Hello and welcome to The Picture Show with Austin and Phil Rude. I'm Austin Rude. I'm the sun.
I'm Phil Rude. I'm the Eggman.
Cuckoo.
I'm the
ca-choo.
Eggman. I am the walrus. Now it's cuckoo.
Now it's cuckoo. Yeah. Ca-choo.
Every week, we watch a movie, and then we quote Beatles lyrics, and then we talk about the movie.
I think this is the first week we've quoted Beatles lyrics ever.
It's true. So. I don't know why I did that.
You can... Except for that movie we reviewed about the Yellow Submarine.
We should watch Yellow Submarine, but we have to watch
is
it
Is there
high.
A movie?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's a cartoon. It's an animated movie.
I was just making a bad joke.
I remember seeing part of it on a UHF channel when I was a kid. And I don't remember very much except that it looked very cheap and very strange.
And it was based off the Beatles, like a Beatles
It
property.
Stars the Beatles, yes.
Okay.
And
in cartoon form.
Yes.
As themselves or different
As
things?
Themselves.
Okay.
And then...
not as Sgt. Pepper?
Nope.
Not as those guys?
Nope.
Okay.
Different album. And then there was I found online, it's been a long time ago, but there was like a comic book adaptation of the Yellow Submarine movie. And I read that, and that was also very, very strange. There's a lot of
fascinating.
There's a lot of media around that time. It was really only meant to be consumed by people who were chemically altered in some way. I think it's very of its time. I don't think it... I am curious.
So it's the Adult Swim of its time?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, Aqua Teen Hunger Force and stuff like that. Yeah. Now, I was just joking, but I kind of think it might be a fun curiosity if we do watch that movie. And just be like, what is this thing? And just watch it, not on LSD and 50 years after
its relevance.
Right. I kind of wonder if we should
that
track
that
down
fun.
And watch
we,
it.
It we might can be add that to the
it
list.
It could be a really fun experiment. So I don't know if this will remain
it's
in the episode
trilogy,
or not.
Though.
But no. But like later, no, you know, yeah. I'm always like. Thinking, man, stuff we should watch. Do you not keep a list of movies?
I do. It's just very disorganized.
Yeah, all mine too. But this is in the chaos. Anyway.
Anyway, Batman, huh?
Yeah.
My favorite Beatle.
John, Paul, George, and Bruce. Yeah. I mean, do we want to talk about what else we've watched this week?
Yeah, well, what is there?
What have
you been up to?
I don't know that I've watched a whole lot of anything this week. It's been really strange. I don't know that I watched a couple episodes of Succession on HBO.
Is it any good?
You know, I tried to watch it when it was new, and I couldn't get into it, and everybody keeps telling me, like, oh, hang in, it gets better, it gets better. And then I kind of watched it with a little bit different lens on it, where I'm trying to, like, kind of size up these characters instead of just going, these are a bunch of rich assholes, I hate them. And when you kind of understand, like, oh, no, that is the point, you're supposed to hate them. Oh, okay, now let me see if I can figure out, like, the psychology of these characters. And it is a little bit more interesting. Yeah.
Right. It can be hard when the characters are meant to be disliked. Yeah. But it's like, this is an analysis of, like, what people
when
are
you,
like.
Yeah, when you see, like, the brother-in-law. And then, like, this other, like, sort of distant family member who's trying to come into the company. And the brother-in-law picks on him. And you realize, like, oh, he's doing that because he's an outsider who weaseled his way in, too. And it's like a game recognizes game kind of scenario. And when you start putting these pieces together, I'm like, okay, this is a little more interesting than I initially gave it credit for. But yeah, I think that's about probably most of what I've watched and, you know, the movie.
And the movie.
What about you? What have you been up to? More Doctor Who?
More Doctor Who, always. Just a quick count. I've watched the first episode of this season of Doctor Who 3 times.
Ooh,
now.
Wow.
And the second episode, which aired 2 days ago, I've seen twice.
Somehow I still have to track down spare time so we can podcast on a regular...
I just don't know where it all goes. I like to analyze multiple times.
Sure.
It's like, I don't get it all the first time. Yeah. But other than Doctor Who, I was really excited to see Last Night in Soho.
Oh, yeah.
And it lives up. It lives up to Edgar Wright's status.
Believe the hype, he says.
I will say it's the... I don't want to call it the least Edgar Wright movie.
Sure.
But it's the most outside of, like, his comfort zone. So I feel like it's not the best at horror, but, like, I feel like it's going to be a learning curve.
Well, yeah, I think it's cool that he's branching out and doing things other than what he's known for.
I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. We talked about last time that he's, you know, he put a documentary out this year. This kind of, you know, outside of, everyone knows him for, like, the Cornetto trilogy. I think Baby Driver's a very different movie for him as well.
It is, yeah.
Like, it's very, not just because it's American, it's almost a musical. It's just like, jukebox musical kind of thing, you know.
And Last Night in Soho plays with that as well. Like
the musical aspect of it?
Yeah, it's not Baby Driver, but the main character is into, like, old 60s music.
Okay.
And so, like, her playlist is the soundtrack, and, like, her record albums, like, so just occasionally her music is bleeding into the movie, but it's also kind of like that's how you get into, like, this character.
Cool.
It is cool.
So you recommend?
I do.
Okay.
You should go see Last Night in Soho.
Or see it when it comes home if you're not comfortable with theaters.
I'm not telling people to.
I just want to go. Clarify, like, if you're not comfortable, wait for it, but do see it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
It's worth the wait.
Good deal. Well, what do we got for this week? What's rounding out this grand trilogy?
Let's see. This week we have The Dark Knight Rises, made in 2012. 8 years after the Joker's capture, and the Batman is still in hiding after he took the fall for Harvey Dent's killing spree. Bruce Wayne is then forced into action when an excommunicated member of the League of Shadows, known as Bane, threatens to destroy Gotham. Also, Robin and Catwoman are here. This movie is written by Jonathan and Christopher Nolan and is directed by Christopher Nolan. It stars Christian Bale as Batman, Tom Hardy as Bane, Anne Hathaway as Catwoman, Joseph Gordon-Levitt as Robin, and Marianne
Cotillard? Yep.
As Talia al Ghul.
Right. You may remember her as Leonardo DiCaprio's wife in Inception.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
That is where I know her from.
You okay. know her from a bunch of other stuff. She's great.
So she's another one of Nolan's...
Kind of go-to.
Go-tos, yeah. Yeah.
She also is... she had an animated movie that David and I watched on Brokeback Mountain that I cannot remember the name of. April and the Extraordinary World. And she did the... I believe she was the original voice. It's a French animated film.
So she was the French voice?
Right, but we watched the English dub that didn't have her in it. But it was a long way to go for that. But,
no, that's cool, though. Yeah.
I think these might be the only two Nolan movies she's in, though. I don't know that I've seen her in, or that I can think of her in another thing. Oh, she is in, not Nolan, but she's in Public Enemies, Michael Mann's movie about John Dillinger, where she plays Dillinger's wife.
All right.
Really cool movie. Really, with Johnny Depp. Christian Bale is in that one as well. Came out around the same time. But, she's great. And she's actually, I really like her as Talia in this.
She's, I don't like Talia, but I think she does her part well.
You don't like Talia?
No.
I think the Talia twist is the one moment, I remember watching this in theaters, and that was the one moment where I really sat up in my seat and I was really excited that they were, when I figured out, oh my God, it's Talia. And
you were excited for that?
I kind of thought it was cool that they were actually bringing her in and that's who she was in this movie. I liked that twist.
I don't understand who she is in relation to anything, any other media. I just know her from this and like that twist means nothing to me.
I think it was I'll admit it's fan service, but I did. I liked the twist and I liked it does kind of drop a little bit out of nowhere, but they plant seeds for it, you know, that she's, you know, sort of horny for Bruce's energy project. And then, like, this is the reveal of why.
Right.
You know, and that she, you know, the idea of the child who climbed out of the prison. It's there. You know, it's not a complete blindside, but just the fact that it is.
No, it's not like.
Talia is like, oh, okay. Yeah, we're going there.
I don't think it came out of nowhere. I feel like it just.
It just didn't have the same impact on you?
It didn't have any value. I feel like it didn't add anything to the story. Like, Bane or her holding the
No,
trigger.
It was a twist. Yeah.
Exactly. That's what it was. It does not matter.
Yeah, it didn't matter. I would argue that plot as a whole matters very little to this movie. But I'll get into that in a minute. I did want to add to your casting list because there's just a couple interesting cast notes.
Who's that?
Ben Mendelsohn, I'm going to call out. He played Daggett, the like board member who was...
right. You need to leave.
Initially hired Bane. And I'm just calling him out because I really like him as an actor. He did the HBO series The Outsider about like doppelgangers and weird like cave demons and shit. It's just... Stephen King adaptation.
Right.
And he was the main character of that, and he is amazing in that thing. It was the first time I really, like, noticed him, and then you go back, and you watch all this old stuff, and you're like, oh, it's that guy! You know, playing a very, very different kind of guy. Brett Cullen, who played the congressman that Selena Kyle initially, like, kidnapped at the beginning.
Right.
He plays Thomas Wayne in The Joker, in Todd Phillips' Joker.
Weird.
Right. And Matthew Modine, who plays the other, like, high-ranking cop, who's, like, looking for Jim Gordon's job, basically.
Oh, yeah.
He plays Private Joker in Full Metal Jacket.
Private Joker?
Yeah, they call him Private Joker because he's always joking around. But, yeah. Anyway, it's a slight Batman connection. Those were just three trivial things that I realized while I was watching this movie. I'm like, oh, it's Ben Mendelsohn.
But, I like the overlap, though.
Yeah, I did too. I thought that was really interesting.
And when you have a legacy character like Batman, if you look at, like, all the adaptions, there's going to be overlap.
Some kind of overlap, yeah.
Like, I think my favorite is there is an actress whose specialty is playing one of the wicked stepsisters in Cinderella, and she's been in, like, so many movies.
As that character?
Yeah, like, looking completely really different weird. To match the tone of different movies, but she always plays Cinderella's wicked stepsister.
That's really strange.
It's weird.
But kind of cool. I guess if you have a specialty, you'd be kind of dumb not to use it.
Do you want to be Cinderella?
No.
I want to be mean to her.
I want to be the bitch to the main character.
That's right.
Well, that's cool.
Can I talk about...
Please.
How this movie is weird?
All right. Right up front... I mean, yes, you can. But right up front, let's just say it. Choices were made.
Choices were made. Were they good? I don't know.
Sometimes.
Here's the thing. Is I feel like, take this movie and dissect it. Like, break up.
Done.
Break up all of the story points, all of the story beats, and group them together with what, like, the storyline, right? And all of those are cool. I just don't like them together.
No, this movie's a mess.
What is the theme here? Like,
oh.
The League of Shadows, Joker, they all had, like, and even, like, the supporting villains and everything in those in the first two movies, it felt like there's cohesion between these storylines, thematically. And, like, I don't even know what the Bane is really after. I guess he's, like, a weird version of what would you do with,
Bane isn't after anything. Bane is just working essentially for Talia.
Right.
That's it.
And she's trying to finish her dad's job.
Right. That's, I mean, it.
But like, there's the weird thing with, like, liberating the city and, like...
Sure.
Like, it feels like a weird social experiment. Like, we're going to take away all the cops. We're going to tell you there's a bomb. Now go crazy and police yourselves and see what happens.
Right. You're going to go live... You're going to drag down the rich people, which, when you isolate that and money doesn't matter anymore, you've already done that.
Right.
Like, now, this... You talk about themes, and that's the problem with this movie, is this movie has a ton of themes, but it doesn't deliver on any of them. And it puts themes ahead of character and plot development. This movie is just all over the place. This movie has themes of the truth, income inequality, the power of belief, ego, ethical use of technology, and hope. These are all big, big themes that I picked up, and it delivers, it fully realizes and delivers you a message on those themes exactly zero times. It gets there, it gets to the end point, but it's just basically told to you every time. It's told, oh, this is, we're dealing with income inequality. That gets dropped like halfway through the movie. It's never brought up again.
Right.
We're dealing with the truth. Alfred has this great speech about, I have it written down. Maybe it's time we stop trying to outsmart the truth and let it have its day. I think that's a great line. That is a great line to give to a character who is trying to say, we've all been living this enormous lie and look what it's gotten us. And trying to right that ship. But then it's just abandoned. And it we never come back to it. All of these themes are, they're brought up, they're sort of played with, and then they're just put back in the box and we move into the next theme. And it's not like The Dark Knight where these ideas of anarchy and chaos versus order versus belief, what do you believe in? And these are themes that run the gamut of the movie through all the ups and downs of character arcs and plots that run through that movie. These themes are always present. These are picked up and dropped as we run through this absolute mess of a plot that this movie is.
Picked up and dropped is perfect for what it's like added on to, like, characters like, oh, okay, Catwoman is going to make some jabs right. at Batman because he's rich, like,
right. Right.
But what's the purpose there? And then, like, Catwoman, I can get into her, like, that's a whole thing on its
own. Best part of this movie. Not lying. I legitimately like Anne Hathaway as Selina Kyle.
Beautiful performance. Nothing to do.
I disagree. I think she had the most realized character arc in this movie. She is all for herself, and she does come back at the end. It's a little forced. I'm not saying it's a perfect character arc, but I think of everybody, she had the biggest sweeping change throughout this movie.
That's fair. I think that's only because
it's a low bar.
They had to do the whole Batwoman arc, or I'm sorry, Catwoman arc in, like, her 40 minutes of screen time here.
Right.
Like it's a lot. I just feel like if you're going to have her here, give her, like, the whole movie. Like, she should be, like, Joker. Like, the main...
Right, yeah.
The main villain here. Like, give her her own space to properly flesh that out. I feel like it doesn't fit into where it is in the movie because, like, the ballroom scene, mm-hmm. That comes, like, way earlier in the movie than I thought it did. Like, the first 20 minutes, I think.
Yeah, something like that.
And I don't know. It just feels like it's in the wrong place.
It's, no, I think it's about right because she's immediately Catwoman. You know, she steals the pearls. He tracks her down, and that's before he even becomes Batman. Is that why you think it's in the wrong place? You think he should be Batman already?
No, I don't know. I feel like Selina's story is just in the wrong order. I feel like a confrontation between her and Bruce should have been later in the movie when it's more heated.
I think, No, I think the ballroom scene is right because it is the beginning sort of confrontation. And it's not a out-and-out confrontation. It is a sort of, I know who you are. And her kind of batting back. And she's like, yeah, I did steal from you. You're crazy rich. And we all have nothing down here. And that's, like, again, bringing up income equality in an interesting way of having someone who's forced to steal sort of against someone she steals from. And, you know, talking about, like, I never steal from someone who has less than me. I never do, you know, it's a sort of, like, altruistic thief that they've turned Catwoman into.
Right.
And then to later on have her and Batman, like, team up and then have her betray him and then kind of come back around to being on his side. I just think, and through the whole like siege of Gotham City, they do check back in with her like several times. You just have like this quick scene of her like, oh man, this is what it looks like and it's ugly. And it's, right. You know, and I just feel like you get more genuine character moments with her. And I think it really helps feel like she has the more, it is super fractured. I'll give you that, because there's big gaps of time where we don't see her at all, you know? So, but I do like her. I think Anne Hathaway, I think her performance is good. I think she's another one of those actors like Natalie Portman that people hate. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, I don't know why you hate her. I think she's really good in a lot of stuff that I see her in.
No, Anne Hathaway is like amazing.
I think, yeah.
The thing is, I went into this movie thinking like loving her Catwoman, and I still do. I just like am. It didn't match up with my memory of the movie. Like, I imagined it so much better.
Right.
And so I just want more.
I think that's it. As you remember the good parts of this movie, and you're kind of like, oh, this movie's not that bad. Mm-hmm. And then you watch it, and then it's like all the other crap that goes, it just drags down. I think this movie has some really, really good parts to it.
And I remember them all separately.
Yes.
Like, it's all completely separate.
This is like a movie you watch on YouTube, where you can, like, be like, rooftop fight scene. Okay,
right.
Car chase, Dark Knight Rises car chase, or the Bane fight, or something like that. Which I like the Bane fight a lot too, because it's brutal and there's like no music and it's just a complete smackdown.
Are we talking about the one where he breaks Bruce's back?
The first time they when Catwoman walks him into the cage with Bane.
Yeah, that's like the oh shit moment of the movie.
Yeah. But I really, yeah, I like that. And I like the themes that this movie wants to say. But this movie just lets us down by not actually getting to those in a meaningful way.
Right. And I feel like part of that is because this movie is trying to do too many things. Not like, we already talked about the different plot lines, but I'm talking specifically like it's trying to be a sequel to The Dark Knight while also trying to complete the trilogy, so tying in things from before into the future, and then also trying to introduce these new characters, like who's right. going to take up the Batman mantle and who's he going to spend the rest of his life with, I guess. It's just too much. And then the Bane thing. Like, Bane, that's its own movie. So, like, that, with all of this stuff added on top of it, just weighs it down so much.
Well, there's a whole huge swath of the middle of this movie where Bruce is just in an underground prison, laying in a bed watching TV. Essentially. Right. You know what I mean? Like, and having these sort of disjointed conversations about hope and, you know, Bane's backstory, and it's all just, it slows the pace of this movie to a crawl. So you're right, this movie is trying to, I think what it picks up from the first two movies and carries forward is great. Like, this idea that we're still celebrating Harvey Dent, and Jim Gordon is like feeling very conflicted about that because he knows the truth about who he is. And the idea that, like, oh, Gotham City is cleaned up now because of this legislation. And the stuff they're carrying forward, which is, like, Bruce being old and, you know, having a fucked up leg and
taking the blame for Harvey Dent, too.
Right. That he's sort of moping around his mansion, still mourning Rachel, and, you know, new threats show up and he feels obligated but not really ready. And that is, I think that's all super interesting too, but ultimately fumbled just as hard as all the rest of the things in here.
Well, here's the thing is we start off with him not being Batman. And then he becomes Batman.
He's like Howard Hughes.
And then he immediately stops being Batman again because Bane beats him.
Right.
So, like, you can either have the confidence failing of Bane beating him in the middle of the movie, or you can have the start off with him being retired. You can't do both. It's too much back and forth, I feel.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a problem with the Batman movie where, and you told me to, you're like, what's the time? When Batman shows up, we check the time, and it's like 45 minutes into the movie.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh my God, you know, like this has been like,
we still have 2 hours left.
I forgot Batman was in this movie, like, because we had gone through almost an hour before he shows up, which is fine. For what they were trying to do is say he's like a reluctant Batman, and this is a major return. I get it. But then they do the other thing where you're right, they take him out of commission, and then they have him do a big return at the end. It's like, you've given me two huge return finales of the same character in the same movie.
Right.
Like, and now it just feels like we're in this weird cycle of, hey, I'm back! You know, right. Like, and,
oh, don't forget the third one where he dies at the end of the movie and then he fixed the autopilot. At
the cafe, right. He just has severe radiation poisoning and doesn't have long to live.
And then he becomes the Hulk.
Ooh, plot twist. No, I blame, speaking of plot twists, I don't know for sure. I didn't look it up. Who took the lead on this script? But Jonathan Nolan is first billed screenwriter on this one.
Correct.
He is not credited with Batman Begins. He is second billed screenwriter on Dark Knight. And this feels like a Jonathan Nolan thing. This feels like I'm going to outsmart the audience. And Jonathan Nolan, if you don't know, was a showrunner on Westworld, on HBO's Westworld, which had a great first season that also juggled a lot of themes, and then fell apart when he decided, I'm going to make everything a theme, and I'm also going to try to trick the audience at every turn, and that became a priority, was juggling themes and essentially having so many things in the air that it was just chaos, and it was disjointed, and it was schizophrenic, and that's what this movie feels like.
I'm really tempted to say that that's all just your
it is
your
my Westworld hatred. It is my. I'm still scarred by how horribly bad Westworld became, and it did.
I don't think you're completely wrong though, because this movie. While I was watching it, I was struck by, like, oh, this feels so, like, planned out, like, plot-wise, that they just, like, built it too much. Like, it's too much plot.
It's too mechanical.
Exactly. So I think that fits in line with what you're saying about Jonathan Nolan.
And I think tonally, it feels not just in... It's directed very similar to, it looks like, the other two. But I think it is a script problem in that it just, story-wise, it doesn't feel like the other two movies. And that's why I think this is like Jonathan Nolan took the lead on this. This is disjointed in a way that the other two are not. It's as much as people say Christopher Nolan doesn't know how to write people. He doesn't know how to write emotions. He's very robotic and whatever. I don't necessarily think that's true, but I think that does contribute to characters like Rachel that I had a hard time connecting with.
Right.
This one feels completely void of humanity. These big emotional moments, these big speeches that Jim Gordon's making, I'm just like, this feels so robotic and mechanical. it feels like a script. And this is supposed to feel like it's coming from his gut. But the words he's saying, every time Alfred, you know, he breaks down crying, I failed you, I failed you. It is so forced and robotic, and I don't buy any of it. Just because it's written untruthfully. I don't think it's delivered untruthfully. It feels like a lie on paper.
It's nothing to do with the scenes themselves. It's how it's put together. That like, okay, like the Alfred crying scene, you're right. But that's just like sandwiched. That's like 5 seconds.
It's just jammed in.
Sandwiched into like this long. And I get it because you're 2.5 hours into this movie at this point.
Right.
But like, come on. Like,
they could have just shown Alfred crying at the grave, mm-hmm. or looking sad, and then you get the payoff at the end when he sees Bruce at the cafe. But the forced emotion, it is enough to show Alfred crying at the grave. You don't have to say, I failed you, I'm sorry, you know, like, that's too much telling. You know what I mean? And it almost just voids that scene. I don't take that scene seriously. Therefore, I don't get the payoff when he sees Bruce at the end because I've already discounted this.
I do like to read that scene, and I don't know if it was meant this way, but it looks like he's not looking at Bruce's grave.
Yeah.
But at the parents, and he's saying, I failed you.
Yeah, that is what it
and
is.
And protecting. Yeah. Oh. No, well, I thought I was onto something brand new here. Okay,
yeah, no, I think that is because he makes a point. Again, this ties to earlier movies better, really well, where he talks about several times through this trilogy, like Thomas Wayne trusted me with his son. Like, that's not, you know, it's not just about money in the house. He trusted me to raise, you know, Alfred's the help. Like, everybody forgets that. Alfred is a hired, he's an employee, and this guy trusted his employee to take care of his son, and at the end of the day, he feels like he failed him, even though he encouraged him with stories of burning down the forest while being some sort of colonizing mercenary in some Far East land.
Now he's backpedaling.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, this, I want to like this movie. I've wanted to like it from the very first time I saw it. And I don't hate it. It's just a mess. This movie is disjointed. And it's unorganized.
And the thing is, I feel like it's such a shame because, like, we could fix this, you know? Yeah. You're just put together in the wrong way. If we could get a team of doctors together, split you into like two movies of a reasonable size.
You sound like your mother before we got married, and she was like, "You're kind of a mess, but I think I can fix you." And I think we have to face up to the fact that the Dark Knight Rises is just a damaged person who is carrying a lot of baggage around
and can't fix everyone.
We just have to hope to give it the right balance of medication and hope it finds its way good enough. The other thing, not to hang it all on Jonathan Nolan's shoulders as much as I would like to, I also kind of wonder if Christopher Nolan wasn't just over making Batman movies by this point. I think in the middle of this, I think Inception came out. I think he was getting ready for Interstellar, which is a hugely ambitious movie.
Yes.
I think he was looking to do non-franchise work on his own ideas and carry that forward. I just kind of wonder if that is sort of what also played into this movie falling flat.
I'm sure that has something to do with it. I really think, and this is full-on conspiracy at this point, because I have no
proof. Hey, let's do it.
But I
just talk shit on Jonathan Nolan for 10 minutes with no proof at all that he wrote a single word of this movie.
And that's what we do here at the Picture Show.
We get sued for libel.
No, I think Heath Ledger, I forgot his name. Yeah. I think his passing really fucked with the plan that Christopher Nolan had for this trilogy. Because when I look at it, one and two, the thing about them is each one of these movies is like very separate. It's a very separate story, just with like the same characters. But if you look at one and two and parts of three, all these characters that are shared throughout the stories, they do have their arcs that they're going through.
Mm-hmm.
And the themes, like the themes of the first two were connected, and I feel like it would have played out better if there was a Joker in this movie. If it was Joker and Bane and Catwoman.
Could be.
And that was like our big three, like three separate ways of living almost, or...
Or just to, yeah, just to have, you know, the idea of still this plot, but, you know, when they bust the prison open, and then just like the Scarecrow is back in this movie, and he connects all three just by appearing in all three, reminding you, yep, this is all one big arc.
Right.
You know, there, you've let loose the Joker, the ultimate, like, anarchist and in chaos architect of Gotham City. Now he's in this city that is walled in on itself. And that, like, what does that do? You know, that,
right.
That amps it up a little bit.
I mean, if you look at the bare bones, like, this movie could have easily been Joker and the League of Shadows combining forces.
Or to... Joker versus the League of Shadows.
Right. Or Joker could have been like the fear drug in the first movie that is released onto the city.
Something, yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, it's entirely possible he had plans. I know what you're saying, that Heath Ledger could have returned, could have been a bigger part. It could have been a unifying theme that held these three movies together.
Right.
And I think that's a valid thought. Again, like everything else, no idea. We're sitting here trying to rewrite this movie into something better.
Because that's what you got
to
do.
Because when... I think we just wanted this to be better. I personally love Christopher Nolan. I love his work. And, you know, anytime there's a director or a writer, and they all have a shit movie. Everyone. Scorsese, Coppola, all these great American filmmakers. They all have a shit movie in their filmography.
It's
a lot
bound
of them,
to happen.
More than one. Yeah. You know what I mean? And this isn't a total shit movie. It's just, you know, we had this idea of, oh, this is going to be the big finale that mm-hmm. caps it all off. And it just wasn't. It just was a kind of disappointing third entry in this trilogy.
It's a stumble.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he comes back with Interstellar, which is maybe the greatest Nolan movie. It's so high-minded and good, you know?
Right. What I think is interesting here is that, like, this is the... I believe these are the only connected movies that Christopher Nolan has ever made. Is that right?
Yeah, I think it is. There is, I think it's mostly internet conspiracy theory that Tenet and Inception are... some people have called them, like, spiritual sequels.
The same universe, maybe.
Same universe, same sort of weird, like, pseudoscience that allows the plot to take place. You know what I mean?
Sure,
like,
play with dream physics, play with
play
time.
Play with time physics, right. Yeah. A weird universe where, yes, basically physics can be bent. But it's, I don't think there's any, like, actual evidence to any of it. I'm sure there's some article somewhere where everybody outlines these obscure things, but
right.
But I think just in the idea of, like, his movies are connected just by the idea of them being, like, high-minded, big concept, things that you can go home and think about after you've... After the plot of the movie is over, your mind is still working.
You know? Right. But I think looking at his work, that Christopher Nolan, like, he doesn't write stories told in multiple parts. Like,
right.
Like, even this trilogy is three separate stories. They're connected vaguely, but, like, the plot elements, it's all one story.
They're connected by a timeline. They're connected by Bruce Wayne. And I do think this is where, to jump ahead, the trilogy succeeds, is in the character of Bruce Wayne. We see him go from an angry young man who doesn't know what justice is to being a broken older man who doesn't know how to hang it up and live his life like a person anymore. He's essentially lost his humanity and is looking to gain it by the end.
He's dedicated himself to a cause and like self-sacrifice.
Right, but when he didn't even really have to.
Right.
Like, there's a great thing that kind of runs through the first half of this movie where Alfred is doing everything to let Bruce know he's too old without telling him directly. Like, when they're watching Bane fight, he's like, look at that, you can't compete with, you know what I mean? Like, he's like, you're old and you've been out of the game for like 7 years. You cannot compete with that guy. And he's like, oh, I'll just fight harder. And he puts his stupid magic knee brace on. that somehow makes his foot indestructible too, you know, like, it's so...
Listen, when you learn about mechanics, you come back and you tell me that brace doesn't work, all right?
He fell down because she kicked his cane out, and then he puts a knee brace on, he's like, oh, I'm, you know, stronger than I've ever been. And
it's... kick bricks.
Kick bricks, which also would have pulverized every bone in his foot. But, you know, whatever. But no, I think the arc of Bruce Wayne as a character, I think that's the success of this movie. And that's the connective tissue of this set of movies.
Yes.
But you're right. Like, these stories are kind of disjointed. Even, like, we talk about how much movie there is in The Dark Knight. It's almost like two separate movies. Batman Begins is kind of like short little vignettes. They're like these little segments of like flashback. And here he is at ninja training. And here he is building his suit. And, it, you know, like right. All of these little... In that way, it's more like Dunkirk. That it's a single movie that is covering time in an interesting way. And also bouncing around to all these different places. But it's still connected in... within one movie.
Right. It's less... I feel like the second and third movie are more grand. There's more yeah. going on. There's more moving parts. It's more like...
It's more linear. Yeah. It's just a straight line of time and event. It's just that they're oddly paced. Not Dark Knight as much as Dark Knight Rises.
A little bit of both, but I definitely Dark Knight Rises.
Dark Knight has a couple worse. Of moments, yeah, where they stumble a little bit. I think Dark Knight Rises is just, it's a really up and down movie. Either a lot of stuff is happening and it's very interesting, or it's not. And the bottom just falls out.
Right.
Oh, I have the good callback. Again, that they kind of step on. The very end, before he flies off with the bomb, and Gordon's like, you're not going to tell me who you are, like, after all this, seriously?
Sure.
And Bruce kind of is like, it's, you know, I could be anyone, whatever he says about people doing good, and he goes, that's even as simple as like putting a coat on a boy's shoulder to let him know the world didn't end. And that's a great callback to Batman Begins, the first interaction of Bruce and Gordon is right after his parents were murdered.
Yeah.
And Gordon is the patrolman. And I think that that is a brilliant callback. And then they like, they show the flashback. And I'm like, we don't need that. We know what happened. And then he goes, Bruce Wayne? And I'm like, this is just too, like, trust your audience to know what we're talking about.
The Bruce Wayne, like, that's it's over too the top. I will say.
It's way too much.
I will say, throughout this trilogy, there's a lot of, like, quick flashbacks to, like, earlier scenes to show that a character has had a realization. And so it fits in that.
Yeah.
And to show Gordon having that realization.
I can live with the flashback scene, but when
him stating it afterwards is a little.
Because he's Jim Gordon. He's the police commissioner. He's like this good detective. And it's like, did you, like, there's certain comics where it's very heavily implied that Jim Gordon knows it's Bruce Wayne. Right. Like, he's figured it out. Nobody's told him explicitly. He doesn't go around with it. He just has figured it out. And in this, it's like, okay, Bruce Wayne returns to Gotham City in Batman Begins. He's been gone for like 7 years. He comes back. All of a sudden, a guy with billions of dollars in military equipment also appears on the scene and start, like, who else could this possibly be?
It really is kind of, like, obvious when you look at all of it.
It's totally obvious. But then I like the idea of Gordon from those comics knowing who it was. And I think the first time I saw this, when Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who we've not even talked about, you know, he's like, didn't you ever figure out who he was? And he goes, I know who he was. I really wanted Gordon to just leave it at that. To just go, yeah, I figured it out. And just have it be that moment of, like, of course he figured it out. And he was his ally. And he just had some honor and kept quiet about it.
Well, that moment about figuring it out and knowing, like, they gave that to Robin in this movie. They had him figure it out. But, like, I actually really like that in a way that, like, it shows that he's... it shows that he thinks like Bruce, but also that he has the detective skills to back it up. And it's definitely setting up the protege rather than, like,
right,
cementing that.
It's okay. I don't love how he figures it out, but it's okay. It's fine.
Right.
You know?
I don't know. I think when you look at this Gordon and comic book Gordon, like, I think those are different characters
a little bit. Like we've talked about before, these movies are a little more grounded. They try to make them a little more realistic, and I think they tried to make Jim Gordon more of a fully realized person, something like what came out of Year One. Did you read Year One yet?
Yeah,
like,
it's really good.
That is essentially a Jim Gordon story. Almost more than it's a Batman story. Like, I like that about it, that it is like you're watching Batman come on the scene, you're watching it be Bruce Wayne.
It's from a different perspective.
It is following Gordon's first year in Gotham as well as a cop. And I really love that back and forth.
It's their buddy cop story.
It is. It totally is. And I like that those elements came from that and it helped to flesh Gordon out. This is where I think the sort of, like, grounded reality of this series grinds to a halt is in Dark Knight Rises. The third movie, I think everything is super heightened, super unrealistic. It is a straight up comic book plot, which is fine, but the other two movies aren't that wild.
You mean the movie about the pit to hell prison,
right,
in the Middle East, and the nuclear bomb over the city.
The idea that you could hold a movie, a city for 6 months without the military either bombing you to hell or, you know, coming in after you, like, or, what was the other thing? I was, oh geez, I just lost it.
The cops in the underground breaking out.
Yes, all of these sort of heightened. Oh, the stock exchange. Like,
yes.
Oh, sorry, oh, Bruce God. Wayne, you're broke because during a terrorist attack at the stock exchange, you made some bad trades, and well, we have to honor that. Like, nothing would be valid. Nothing. Like, it's so insane to me. That weird plot twist where Bruce Wayne loses all his money. I'm like, that doesn't even have to happen for this movie. Like, that doesn't play into the bigger plot at all.
It plays into the Talia twist a little.
Yeah, I guess it does. Getting
the access codes.
Yeah.
But, like, it's still not enough to...
It's too much. Yeah.
They literally threatened... Like, she was willing because she was secretly the one behind it all. But the other two board members, Fox and the other guy, they threatened... them, they could have easily threatened Bruce Wayne or another board member.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
And how did they get into contact with Catwoman? when did that happen?
Oh, because she was working for that mobster trying to get the MacGuffin device that erases your record.
That's right, that is explained.
You leave my Catwoman alone.
All right. Jeez.
No, seriously, best part of this movie.
She's great. I wanted more of her.
I would watch an Anne Hathaway Catwoman movie.
I would too.
I think
I know the last Catwoman movie scarred us, but
yeah, well,
it's I think we could fare better.
No, I think there was an interesting plot to, again, interesting stuff in this movie that just isn't handled very well.
Right.
And I think that's the most frustrating part about it. I say it all the time. I like a movie that will take a chance, even if it doesn't execute well. And I think this movie didn't execute well, but I don't think I'm not going to say it didn't take chances, but it kind of played within a structure that was already in place. It didn't stray too far out of there. And then it just handled everything really clumsily.
Right. Because it was really... about setting up that last third act.
Yeah.
And just getting all these pieces in place so that we can... Okay, you move here, you move there.
Which by that time, I think everybody who's watching this movie is just over it by that time. You know what I mean? Like, right. There's some fun stuff in the... I like the tank chase, the tumblers running through the streets and things like that. I do like that. I think... Catwoman on the motorcycle is really cool. Like, just that last car chase is fun. It's too little too late for me.
Right. It's kind of the obligatory, we're wrapping things up.
Yeah. Overall, do you recommend this movie?
No.
No? Just a blanket no?
Just watch the Catwoman stuff on YouTube.
I will say there's got to be a highlight reel of this movie. I will say if you're a completist and you want to watch, if you want to sit down and watch the trilogy, you can do worse. But overall, this is a movie I own.
Mm-hmm.
Logan likes this movie. And if Logan turns this movie on, I'll sit and watch it with him. It's fine. Bane's a fun character.
He is. I Bane has good presence.
I love Tom Hardy, and I think he plays Bane super well.
It's just not as satisfying as like the Joker, because again, there's no like thematic stronghold on this movie.
He's not he's a mercenary. He's not like a he's not being philosophical and like I believe in this. He doesn't really believe in anything. You know,
right.
Even like he's loyal to Talia, but even she's like, keep him alive. And he's like, I'm going to fucking straight up murder this guy as soon as she leaves.
I can't wait.
There's elements of this movie I think are great. There's ideas here that I think are good. It's just kind of a mess. So there's stuff to pick out of here. I think you can do worse in this movie, but I don't think I would like point someone at it and go, if you're looking for something great. Dark Knight Rises, because I just don't think it's there.
And I think in terms of, like, watching it to complete the story, like, if you wanted for a first time, yeah.
Sure.
But, like, on... If it was the first movie was this quality and then it got better, but I would say ultimately just, like, you can watch the first two and then cap it off.
Yeah.
That right there.
I think so, yeah. Yeah, the problem is it just kind of gets left on a cliff at the second one. So you want that closure.
Right.
But...
Can I say one thing? Sorry, this is, like, all over the place.
Yeah, it's just like this movie.
That's right. is that our theme for this episode?
Well, yeah, but we left it way back at the intro.
Oh, sure. One thing that this movie did that made me upset is I feel like it ruined the Rachel storyline of the last movie. Specifically, the Alfred burning the note.
Like,
they end that storyline on Bruce isn't gonna know that she chose Dent over him.
Right.
And then they just undo that for this movie. It makes me wonder why they did it in the first place.
It takes
away the emotional impact.
It undermines it, and it's like, well, what if Rachel wrote this letter to you, and I didn't get, you know, it's just like a gotcha bitch kind of kind of move. And it's just like, no, dude, you sound like you're just saying anything to get him to not do what you want him to do. And it just, it played out like a CW drama. Like
it was very middle
like
school
Riverdale.
Drama, yeah.
It's like all of a sudden this becomes Riverdale and only,
oh my God.
Only somehow even weirder. Yeah, you're right. I think there's a lot of trying to backpedal on stuff that the better movie did. It's like, no, don't undo the good movie.
Why have you changed your mind since
Rise,
then? Right.
Rise to this to the occasion for this movie. And I feel this movie really dropped the ball in a lot of places.
Should really be The Dark Knight drops the ball.
Drops the ball.
That's right.
And then trips over it and falls down the stairs.
And then it explodes.
Yeah. That's all I got, man.
Yeah, I don't know.
There's a lot of other stuff in here, but it's really just nitpicky stuff. And honestly, like, in doing that, I was trying to pick out notes of things that I liked. And just naturally, I was so critical of this movie while taking notes and watching it. Because just so much stupid little shit stood out to me. Like Joseph Gordon-Levitt is in, like, Gordon's hospital room. And he's like, oh, yeah, we searched the sewer. What about if we search the sewers? And Matthew Modine goes, get this hothead out of here. I'm like, dude, he said that in the calmest voice possible. Why are you calling him a hothead? Why are you acting like he's this crazy rookie? I'm like... He hates Joseph Gordon, like, he hates Joseph Gordon-Levitt, but he has no reason to. Like, that's what I'm saying, they go, this is who this character is. Well, why? You haven't shown us any of, that's just who he is. That's who we need him to be for this.
They set that up to make Robin, like this cop that, like, just does the, like, wild shit.
Yeah.
But, like it's not that
but
crazy.
He's not. Yeah, he's totally not.
And also,
kind of boring.
Right.
Yeah.
And also, if you're in a you're in your boss's hospital room with one of your employees, and your employee, who your boss likes, is telling your boss an idea that your boss is also on board with, you're gonna shout to no one in the room,
get this hothead out of here!
Right! Like,
it's so dumb.
Makes no sense.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's, I think, actually, now that I say that, I think that's what defines where this movie fails. Nobody earns their character moments. They just are that. They just are instantly that. Here, you're going to be the cop who hates Batman. Why? We just need a cop who hates Batman in this movie. That's you. And you hate the new Robin. Well, why? What's he done? Nothing. But we need you to hate him so he looks like a bad boy. You know, like,
right.
And really, like, Joseph, what a waste of Joseph Gordon-Levitt, like, who's honestly really great in everything. I don't think he's great here because I don't think they gave him anything to do.
I like him enough in it, but I...
He's fine, but it just is, like, even when he calls out Gordon for, like, lying about Harvey Dent for all these years, he just, he lets it go.
And then cut to the next scene.
Yeah, I'm just like, wait, that didn't resolve anything. You know, it just, yeah. This movie just cut off all, it's like, it cut all the, what would have been the interesting part. They just cut it all off.
Right.
But, yeah. Yeah, that's all I got. Bunch of nitpicky stuff. Big positive, Thomas Lennon in here. I like him.
Who's that?
He is probably best known for Reno 911. He plays... Lieutenant Jim Dangle.
Yes,
he's the doctor.
Okay.
Who tells Bruce, "I do not recommend you go heli-skiing."
Great.
But he
should have been one of the cops.
He played a doctor in Memento, also by Christopher Nolan's first big movie. He played a doctor in that, he was a doctor in that. He shows up periodically in. And Christopher Nolan stuff, always in these like little roles like
it's
that.
A cool kind of.
But
thing.
It's one of those things where it's like when he shows up, it's like, oh yeah, Thomas Lennon, that guy's great. Yeah,
that's fun.
It is fun. Trilogy wise, what do you think? Does this trilogy work as a whole?
No.
It is really.
It doesn't work as a trilogy. First and second movie, I think they go together thematically, but really, like, I would much rather watch them alone. Like, yeah. I'll pick out today's a Dark Knight day, today's a Batman Rise, Batman Begins day.
Yeah.
It's, I don't think it goes well together.
I'm going to have my cake and eat it too, because I'm going to agree and disagree with you. They fumble the third movie, as we established.
Yes.
It's not fun to watch, so therefore it's not fun to watch the whole trilogy. But trilogy-wise, I do think it works. I think structurally, they do take it from the... Just like Planet of the Apes, we get to see Caesar's whole arc, beginning of his life to the end of his life. We get to see the beginning of not Bruce's life. We get to see the beginning of Batman's existence to the end of Batman's existence. I think structurally, that works. It takes place roughly in the same world that does evolve over time. They shot a lot of this movie in Pittsburgh, not Chicago, because Pittsburgh looks like a cleaner Chicago because it was cleaned up more. And, you know, I think it doesn't... it's a little disjointed. It's a little, for me, it's like, oh, that's not Gotham as we've come to know it. But it's also supposed to portray a different kind of Gotham. Right. So, characters do evolve throughout this. Jim Gordon evolves. I think what he is doing well in this third movie is he's a little off the rails. He's at the end of his career and he's losing his grip on his career. He's lost his family. He's a little, like, erratic. He's not doing well. And we do get that because, as we've established, being the official Gary Oldman podcast.
That's correct.
Gary Oldman's great. So I think story-wise, it does do the things that trilogies are supposed to do. It is connected across all three movies, and it does have an arc that goes over all three movies while still having the individual arcs of the movies. The third one... it's just not very fun to watch. It is by far the chore of the three.
I think, though, even... first off, you're right. They do
connect. That's all I need. All right. Well, we'll see you next time.
No, but... Great. Lost my train of thought.
No. You said, I'm right, which was the important part. Mm-hmm. But also, that... Is it just that...
Even if the third one, like, the third one failed to stick the landing, but even if it stuck the landing, I feel like each of these movies is so, like, self-contained in its plot that watching them together, like, back-to-back would not be a fun experience in the way that watching, like, Lord of the Rings or Planet of the Apes, those trilogies together, because, like, this is, like, heavier, this is more in-depth, and it's just more plot. So I feel like they're each self-contained, and so watching them together as a trilogy feels a little funky. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that's a personal taste matter, because I think watching any trilogy back-to-back-to-back is a big order. Like, if you were going to sit down and marathon them, like, that's a lot.
I'm not saying it's easy for any trilogy, just that...
I don't know. You had me at Lord of the Rings, because Lord of the Rings is essentially one single timeline.
Yeah.
But those movies aren't necessarily self-contained. A little bit they are. Two Towers ends with a big battle, but it's all in service of the big arc. I will say what throws the trilogy off for this one is I think there is a tonal shift with the third movie. It just feels different.
I feel like Batman Begins also feels very different.
Because it's brighter, I think. It starts off a little bit brighter.
Yeah.
This one, I think, is just sort of like I said, they lose being grounded. They lose the reality. Mm-hmm. And it just becomes, this is a comic book plot.
But it looks sleeker, too. Like, in look it terms, looks, it's action-y.
The last fight is in daylight. You know, they make this big deal in the earlier movies of, like, Batman doesn't, you know, oh, you guys have your mobster meetings in the daytime because there's no Batman in the daytime. You know, but, like, in this one, it's like, oh, no, this is all broad daylight. They're fighting on City Hall streets in daylight. And it is... I think tonally, this movie just feels different. So you do lose some connection there.
Yeah.
I could go either way. I think this movie this trilogy works from a technical standpoint of having self-contained and an overarching.
It does technically arc. Count as a trilogy.
On a technical level of what I would count as a successful trilogy. But... we keep coming back to this one just isn't, yes, you could watch all three and they work in that way, but why would you want to?
Yeah.
Like, kind of thing. So, yeah, interesting. This one's really divisive on the trilogy end of it.
It is.
But we agree on the individual movie. It comes up short.
We do agree there.
Yeah.
Also, how weird is it to be a Gotham citizen after, like, 11 years, in the span of 11 years, there's like three mass terrorism events.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's wild.
It is. Even in after their post-gentrification era, which they're in this movie. You know, we've cleaned up everything.
Just move to Metropolis, because apparently in this universe, nothing happens in it. There's no Superman.
Yeah, that's true. Weird. All right.
Do you have anything else to say about this movie?
No, I've given all the time I want to this movie.
And that is fair.
That's where I'm at. You?
Nope. Goodbye, Dark Knight Rises.
All right.
Let's close that box and maybe lock it a few times.
Go read Dark Knight Returns, the graphic novel.
There's also a two-part animated movie
of that
called
yeah.
The Dark Knight.
Dark Knight Returns.
Returns.
I've not seen it.
No, but I just saw it on HBO Max.
Yeah, they have all the Batman stuff on HBO Max.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah,
it is. Shout-outs.
Let's do it. What do you have to shout out?
I have a podcast I've been listening to called The Judgies. And I found them on TikTok initially. They put clips of their... they are on YouTube, but I listen to their podcast. These are three people in my home state of Illinois. And they do a podcast where they read like Reddit posts and things like that. A lot of am I the asshole situations, you know,
sure,
where people,
yeah,
and then they weigh in on those. I listened to another podcast called Am I the Asshole that just deals with that. But I'm shouting out the judges this time because they are super fun. It's a married couple and one of their friends, and sometimes his partner is on there as well. And they just kind of run down these things. They make stupid jokes. It's one of those podcasts that does have a structure, but they're joking around and having fun, and you kind of feel like you're hanging out with friends while you're listening, and it's just a really, really good time. And I don't know what link I'll use. It'll either be like a straight up website link or the YouTube to their YouTube channel. But that's the Judgies. It's really fun. Those situations are always like fun
absurd
to listen to because they are absurd, and you get to kind of go, oh yeah, I agree with what you're saying there, or you make your own judgment as you go along. They're kind of
right.
It's kind of like reality TV where you peek in on someone else's messed up life.
It's kind of like, what would you do? Like you,
yeah,
you get to be like, oh, those assholes didn't help that
but,
person right. pretending to be
we
blind.
We set up
or something.
The worst situation possible. Like, what do you got, Oz?
I am shouting out a single video, but it's by a YouTube channel that I think everyone should check out. So, this is called Art That Was Never Finished, and it's by The Art Assignment. The Art Assignment is a PBS digital studio production.
Okay.
It's run by John Green's wife, Sarah Green. And it basically aims to just to make videos. It's like art history lessons, but also okay. just like sometimes it delves into specific art pieces. And this specific video, which is about pieces that were intended to be one way and never made it to that result.
Okay.
It really goes into depth into the different ways that this might happen or why. There's a piece in there that was a portrait of a child and was abandoned because the child died. But then there's also like pieces that the artist just didn't like and gave up halfway through, and like half finished sculptures, and what this says about the artist and right. art and humanity and death and endings. And so all of that, it's a really interesting perspective, and that video in particular always makes me think about art in a different way. So
that's really interesting. I'm gonna check that out because you know, everybody has unfinished art laying around.
Oh boy.
And a lot of it has, you know, with me, most of the time, it's just something I lost interest in or whatever. But like, yeah, to hear some of the stories behind that, I'm sure that's really cool.
Everything has a story. Everything that's ever been created.
It's true. On that note, I'm going to say thank you for listening to this episode of The Picture Show with Austin and Phil Rude. If you enjoy our show, please leave a review on your podcatcher of choice. It helps our visibility. It helps us grow the show.
Do you want to hear another way to help us grow the show?
I do.
Good, because I'm going to tell you. You could tell a friend. And if you don't, well, then we'll just trap you in a city.
Tell your underground prison buddy.
Oh yeah.
He's fixing your back and making like little doctor small talk, and you'd be like, hey, you know what I've been listening to lately? The Picture Show with Austin and Phil Rude.
That's right. You would like it.
Yeah, check it out, man.
I'm sure you get great Wi-Fi reception in
you know, they had cable there. So
oh, that's true.
I mean,
anything's possible.
It is.
Be like Batman and listen to us. All right, what is next week's movie? We are done with this trilogy.
We are done with this trilogy. and we are moving on to our final trilogy of the season. We are watching Robert Rodriguez's kind of launch into stardom, the 1990s indie boom darling, El Mariachi. This movie was super important to the indie films of the 90s, and it kicked off the Mariachi trilogy. I am really looking forward to revisiting this. I've not seen it in years. It is crazy, crazy cheap looking. So brace yourself for that.
I watch classic Doctor Who. Okay?
Everybody who is watching along with us, do not expect high production value. I know that this movie was made for like 10 grand, and settle in and just try to see what this movie wants to be.
I can suspend my disbelief of a cheap set in service.
That's
of
what I'm talking
the
about.
Story you're delivering.
This is a cheap Mexican movie. Like it is on the down low.
It sounds like it's like really important to
super,
like just history.
Yes, it's super interesting, and I'm really excited to revisit it. I may come away laughing and going, "This looks like absolute garbage, and it's not fun." But to talk about the importance of this movie and what this movie meant to me when it came out. So I'm really excited to talk about it and to get into the rest of this trilogy because I have not seen any of them in quite a while. And I just remember they get bananas crazy. So we're going to have fun with this
one. If it's as crazy as your last trilogy that was based off an indie movie.
Yeah, let's see what this one shakes out, man. We're watching some really interesting stuff this season. I'm really enjoying this trilogy series.
It's good. Yeah. It's been fun.
It is. Social media. What do you got, Aus?
I am at Austin N. Rude and Old Who Review, and that is on Twitter. Where are you at?
I am philrude.com. From there, you can buy artwork or check out all of our episodes. And just see what I'm up to in general. Also, at Phil Rood on Twitter, at PhilRood75 on Instagram. Aus, you want to read the credits?
Yep. We always do everything ourselves.
Always. There you have it. We'll see you next time on The Picture Show.
See ya.